Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 169 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
Yeah, so, man, another week of some really interesting things happening. And probably the one that stuck out the most to me was Jack Mallers is now the CEO of a competing company to MicroStrategy. It's going to be called 21 Capital. They're launching with 42,000 Bitcoin in their reserves, backed by both Tether and SoftBank. They have a SPAC that's going to allow them to merge with Cantor Equity Partners, which is a subsidiary of Cantor Fitzgerald. And they want to be a better MicroStrategy and compete with them. So, I mean, super interesting. I'm intrigued where this is going to go. Jack Mallers is probably one of the only guys out there that can compete with MicroStrategy in terms of being a Bitcoin bull. So this is really interesting to see what happens.
Oh, I agree completely. The fact that they're going to be like a MicroStrategy strategy without an operating company. It's like cut out that little $50 million a year operating strategy and or operating company and just focus on finding different ways to fund more Bitcoin purchases to increase your stock price and increase your Bitcoin per share. And I mean, there's a lot of things that have happened in the last 12 months where it's like, man, this feels early, you know, like an executive order for a strategic Bitcoin reserve, you know, whether that pans out or not, feels early. Having a company jump in with basically $3 billion worth of Bitcoin, combining some pretty big companies. I mean, Tether's huge. They're like the number six buyer of U.S. Treasuries right now. And it feels like there should be more companies that are just using their normal operations to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So good. It's definitely a good thing. We'll see where it goes. But I mean, if it still has the same volatility as MicroStrategy, then you have all the options plays and everything that comes into to play with a company like that. So I think it'll be an interesting thing to watch. I will imagine that they will have a steeper learning curve on how to get all these things done. One, Michael Saylor basically showed them the way to do stuff. But two, between SoftBank and Cantor Fitzgerald, they know every single method to get any money out of anywhere. And so I think Michael Saylor and his guys, you know, had to kind of do a lot of work to get there. I think these guys are going to have some shortcuts up their sleeve.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Saylor has pretty much paved the way for them to move forward with this. And it'll be really interesting. I mean, you talk about strategy. They just acquired another $1.4 billion of Bitcoin, which is just over 15,000 Bitcoin. They're now over 553,000 Bitcoin, and 21 is going to start with 42,000. So they got a long ways to go to catch up with strategy, but it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think anytime you have companies focused on creating more products for Bitcoin, for the Bitcoin ecosystem, that's only got to be a good thing right now.
Well, not only that, there's got to be some kind of a Venturi effect here where other major companies see Cantor Fitzgerald and Tether and SoftBank get together to do this, and then they feel more comfortable about just buying Bitcoin with the cash reserves. So, you know, you talk about it'll be tough to catch strategy. It's going to be really tough to catch strategy if everybody keeps buying and the price starts to run away. So that will be fine with me, but we'll see what they can do.
Well, interesting you say that. So Bitwise had their Bitcoin Standard Investors Day, and during that, they talked with a bunch of people. One of the ones that was kind of interesting was Kraken CFO predicted that 20% of all the public companies, which there's 55,000 of them, are going to own Bitcoin in a few years. So that's 10,000 companies, public companies, are going to be owning Bitcoin in a few years. And right now we're at 79. So, I mean, you're talking about if all of them start to acquire and realize that you can hold something other than US dollars in cash on your reserves, then it gets to be super crazy.
Oh yeah. You start having that kind of buy pressure and you run out of sellers, then the price can go nuts. So Bitcoin's always interesting, but this will be fun to watch because, you know, these things, it seems like they happen fast. Like the ETF was approved really quickly, but it's not like the price skyrocketed the day after the ETF opened. And so, you know, we have this kind of thing happen right now. Well, this may be 2 years, 3 years of ramp up kind of stuff. And as it pulls in other companies and other companies decide to do something similar. And, you know, the Bitcoin 4 year cycle only has 6 months left before we would normally see a drawdown. And I mean, if the price drops while these guys are buying, then there's a lot of sellers out there that are happy to sell Bitcoin at under 100,000. I don't know how many of those guys are out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, still, you talk about companies wanting to buy Bitcoin. We're almost 2 months into GameStop raising, what, $1.5 billion by selling some stock so that they could buy Bitcoin. And they're still sitting on that cash. They don't know how much of it they want to use to buy Bitcoin. So even though GameStop, which seems to be one of the companies that understands why they want to put Bitcoin on their balance sheet, is still dragging their feet and buying Bitcoin. And on top of that, $1.5 billion, they have what, close to $4 billion in cash sitting in their reserves too, right? So if they're struggling to figure out when to pull the trigger, imagine some of the other companies that are not even at that point yet, raising money to buy Bitcoin and things like that. So I think it's going to take some time, but once it happens, it's going to be this waterfall effect that it just can't stop.
Right. And you know, that's a good point. You got to get a company like GameStop, which is not huge, but they have a board and they've got to go through the whole process of figuring out how to do it legally and not violate securities and what they can say and give advisory memos to their executives and stuff like that. So, you know, that everything takes a little bit longer, but you know, the first bit of news where it's like GameStop's going to borrow money to put Bitcoin on the or they changed their charter so that they could put Bitcoin in their balance sheet. You know, that's step one. Actually buying the Bitcoin is quite a bit down the road. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what these companies do. And it's going to be interesting to see if companies just create little spinoff companies that generate some cash and buy Bitcoin. And if something goes wrong, the whole thing doesn't come down. You know, that's got to be one of the things they're most concerned about is, you know, it affecting the operating company. So they'll find ways around that, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, it's super exciting to see what's going to happen there. The other big news that I saw was from the Federal Reserve, and they retracted their guidance discouraging banks from engaging in crypto, which I think is a pretty big deal. This pretty much puts them in line with the FDIC and the OCC, who has pretty much said the same thing. They reversed their really anti-crypto position. So now this whole concept of choke point 2.0 is kind of been thrown out the window, and everybody's saying, oh yeah, if you want to go engage in crypto, you're free to do it. You don't even have to ask permission.
Yeah. And on the flip side, if you're engaged in crypto and Bitcoin and you have 550,000 Bitcoin and you want to be a bank, you can do that. So, you know, I think that's going to work both ways. And you know, we've talked about before, Strategy having to come up with ways to pay some of these like Strike and Strife dividends and pay off these kind of the cat stuff. When they do a convertible note, then they don't need to generate cash. But these other methods of generating some revenue to buy Bitcoin, you know, they're going to need cash, and becoming a bank is one way to do it. So I'm interested to see, but I've said it for a long time. When you log into your Wells Fargo or Bank of America account and you see your checking account and then you see your savings account in Bitcoin and it has zero, and you keep seeing news headlines about Bitcoin price going up and people, you know, having 100 Bitcoin that they bought for $5,000. And there's going to be some retail FOMO that I don't think we've really seen in this cycle, where people are going to want to jump in because, you know, rich people don't like other people becoming richer than them.
And it's still, I mean, the number of millionaires out there is more than 21 million. And there's only 21 million Bitcoin available, ish.
Yeah,
you can argue it's a lot less than that.
It's a lot less than that. You know, a lot of people aren't going to sell their Bitcoin for just about anything. I mean, you know, I think I was reading, you know, some of these like someone posted, like, why is Bitcoin under 100,000 right now based on X, Y, and Z? I mean, all the stuff we talk about, all these bullish, gigantic, you know, infrastructure building components that would help drive the market. And the one of the guys that I like, is he's like a on-chain analytics guy. He's like, there's a lot of people that have a ton of Bitcoin that they bought super cheap way early, and they sell into it and then they'll buy back and stuff like that. So it's like there's Bitcoin that there is some float in the Bitcoin liquidity that, you know, you can pull out. But if it's going into entities that are just going to hold it, it can't last forever.
When I think it's at a 7-year low of the amount of Bitcoin on exchanges too. It's, I mean, it's still like 2.4 million Bitcoin, right? So it's a lot, but it's definitely going in the down direction, which is going to make it harder and harder at some point to get Bitcoin if you want it.
Yeah.
So we talked about Atkins becoming the new SEC commissioner. His first day was here recently, and it was funny. He kind of came out and said he wouldn't be another Gensler, which is interesting. He talked about that the market participants engaging with this technology deserve clear regulatory rules of the road. So it's exciting to see that that's happening. He's got a ton of stuff on his plate still. I mean, the SEC already delayed ETF decisions on Polkadot, Hedera, a third fund that was based on the performance of Bitcoin and Ethereum. So now a lot of that has been pushed out to June 11th. So maybe we'll start to see some things happen at that point. I know there was some news that everybody thought a XRP ETF was happening, and apparently that's fake news. So it's not going live in April like some of the news was saying. But yeah, there's a lot of excitement, a lot of work going on behind the scenes. I think he praised some of the guys that were there already from the past 90 days, what they've done. So yeah, it's been exciting. And I think we're just getting started from an SEC engagement perspective.
Right. And you know, the ETFs really do allow an easier path for corporations to get exposure to Bitcoin. And well, you know, when you talk about MicroStrategy and this Cantor Fitzgerald conglomeration pulling other companies in, I think the ETFs will become pretty important. But you know, even saying that, the GBTC ETF still generates more revenue than all the other ETFs combined. So you know, we think that a lot of money have flown into has come into the ETFs. You know, IBIT's got $54 billion. In under management, FBTC is at 18.7, GBTC is at 17.9. So they're still in third place, even though, you know, for the first several months, GBTC was just bleeding out Bitcoin, and it seems like it's stabilized. And because they're close to 1% in fees and everybody else is a fifth of that or so, they're still generating a ton of money. So as much as you and I believe that they kind of fumbled this handover, look how important it is to get early in Bitcoin, right? Yeah. These guys have done some pretty kooky things, and here they are still generating more cash because they were early. And I think you see individuals do that, and you see corporations like Strategy do that, and you're going to see countries do that. I mean, it's eventually people get tired of being at zero while other people are taking off.
Yeah, so I saw that too. $268 million a year in fees is what Grayscale gets from their fund, where the rest of them combined are $211 million a year. So it's, I mean, that's a lot considering there's what, 8 others out there that you're adding together. So yeah, that's kind of crazy. You also talk about IBIT. They had over $1.1 billion in inflows in over 3 days last week. So it's kind of the first time we've seen a lot of inflows into the ETFs in quite some time. And I think that was maybe one of their records since near the beginning as it all started. Saylor came out and said he thinks IBIT's going to be the largest ETF in 10 years. Now, it's got a ways to go because it's, what, $54 billion in assets. Currently, the Vanguard S&P 500 has about $573 billion. So it's got to 10x that and keep up with whatever Vanguard is growing. So I think the math that I've seen is they need to see somewhere between $1 and $4 billion a day of inflows coming in for the next decade or so, which is going to be interesting to see if that happens.
Oh, I mean, the ETFs to me are like this. The more Bitcoin grows and kind of develops and has these different things that, you know, like I try not to be a Bitcoin maxi that thinks everybody needs to do cold storage and, you know, hold Bitcoin until there's everybody's just buying and selling things in Bitcoin. And, you know, I try not to do that because there's a good chance a lot of people don't live long enough to see that. So you like you, congratulations, you pass that on to somebody, but yeah, like 10 years is a long time to wait. If you're like, expect, you know, if that's your time frame to improve life, take lifestyle improvements in your good decision making and your, you know, you did research into Bitcoin before other people and got yourself into it and took the risk, you know, usually risk and reward are connected, but it's not a lot of reward to just keep watching your unrealized gains go up. So I think with the MSTY ETF, I think a lot of people are starting to get a little looser with that and start to take on some cash. I had lunch with a friend of mine who's into Bitcoin and he's kind of doing the same similar thing. Like he was into real estate, but the MSTY is tough when you're, if, when you talk about converting real estate into MSTY for monthly cash flow. I mean, you don't have any of the problems that you have with actual real property, but you do exchange it for some risk on the MSTY side. You know, if volatility drops or if, you know, if MSTY starts to get really big, I don't know what that does to the options for MSTR. Like I've seen there's quite a bit of flows going into MSTY. It's still pretty small, but, you know, eventually if more and more people catch on to it, it'll be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Fingers crossed it lasts for a little while at least.
Well, like this tariff thing rocked the whole market. I mean, we in April, the stock market went down more than it did before the Great Depression. And then it came almost all the way back in a month. I had some people contact me about it and they're like kind of freaking out because their 401k is dropping and this and that. And I'm like, when they shut the world down for COVID, we bounced back pretty quick. I'm like, I think we're going to bounce back pretty quick from this. So, you know, if you didn't sell before this thing went down, then I wouldn't sell now.
Yeah. Don't get out.
Yeah. It's like 2 days later or 2 weeks later and everything's basically back to where we were. So, you know, once that, I'm not sure what the plan is anymore for the tariffs and everything. I mean, you know, we're trying to get rates down so that we can refinance the debt. We're trying to get the dollar down so that we can bring back manufacturing and we can export. Those two things tend to battle each other because if you're a foreign purchaser of U.S. treasuries and you're getting paid in U.S. dollars and the rate's coming down, you're going to want to buy less. And then if the dollar is coming down and you're operating in euros or won or whatever, now you're going to want it even less than that. So I don't know what they're going to do next, but I think I hope they learned a lesson of like, maybe don't shock the entire global trade system. Cause I mean, they really had to backtrack out of that thing. So we'll see how it goes, but it was nice to see Bitcoin's performance and all that. It dropped, but it didn't drop like crazy. It didn't hit, you know, it didn't go below 70, like, you know, like the previous all time high. So that, you know, I thought it held down pretty well.
Yeah. No, I think if you look at it in the past month of all this has happened, it's pretty much been flat, which has been kind of crazy. Now gold's been up, right? But Bitcoin didn't take the huge drop that I think everybody expected it to do when this happened. So yeah, it's starting to trend in the right direction. I don't know if it's ever going to disconnect from equities like everybody thinks it will and be more like a hedge against the dollar, but we're definitely going in that direction.
Yeah. And you mentioned gold. So gold has now outperformed stocks since the 2008 great financial crisis. So these gold bugs, these like sound money guys that are all into gold, are actually finally getting paid off after being like correct, but gold price just wasn't moving. You know, they've in the last year or so, they finally got a little bit of theirs, which is fine with me because I think Bitcoin gets to the half of the market cap of gold and without a ton of work. Like, I don't think that that's a lot to ask. And so as long as the market cap of gold keeps going up, then half of it keeps going up too. So I'm happy to see that.
Yeah, it's one of those where if you just would have put 1% in Bitcoin versus the 100% in gold, I can't imagine what that would have done for the total return too.
Right.
So the other thing that I did see that was going on is this battle for stablecoin legislation right now. And it's interesting, we talked a few weeks ago about Bank of America kind of throwing their hat into the ring that they wanted to possibly be involved in stablecoin creation. Well, of shocker, they are pushing for rules that are favoring banks versus tech companies. And what it sounds like, based on some insiders, is they want to own it all versus having open networks, which is kind of a typical bank, right? So we're also seeing Circle come out and saying that they're the U.S. compliant alternative to Tether. Of course, Tether is there too. So it'll be really intriguing to see who will battle and what sort of regulation we see for stablecoins, because it's theoretically supposed to happen any day now.
Yeah, I think that'll be a big one. You know, the further we go, and we've talked about it for a couple of years now, probably that Bitcoin's got an obvious advantage, and then stablecoins have an obvious use case. And then after that, it's kind of hard to tell. Mm-hmm. So I think getting the stablecoin stuff straightened out will be good. But, you know, as long as we're talking about government stuff, you know, we still haven't seen how much Bitcoin the different divisions of the federal government have from the executive order. And we're going to be getting close to 2 months, which would be a month late from when they were supposed to produce their findings on how much Bitcoin they control. So, like, again, things happen quickly and then it slows down. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I did see a little bit of information about that, and it kind of showed that the U.S. has sold off about 15,000 Bitcoin. Biden got his wish right before Trump came on. He was able to convince some people to sell it off. So we went from about, I think, 213,000 to 198,000 Bitcoin. Still puts us in the number one spot ahead of China, although China just stayed flat at 190K. Because we don't really know what China's going to do at this point. I don't think they know what they're going to do. But what was interesting is Bhutan, where we've talked about them in the past, they went from about 13K down to 8.5K. So they've been selling off for some reason. I'm not really sure how, but I mean, they sold off close to almost 50% of their stack. The only country out there that had bought more is El Salvador,
Yeah. Which
is crazy because the IMF put all these restrictions on them that they couldn't have Bitcoin as the official currency. And there's apparently an ongoing review right now. And El Salvador was able to get around the IMF restrictions by channeling purchases outside of their fiscal sector. So yeah, good for them. They're still figuring it out. Of course, I think still the biggest loser and from the government side of things is Germany. They sold off, 46,000 plus Bitcoin in the past year. So I still think they will look kind of get some egg on their face when all this kind of blows up. But yeah, it's wild right now.
Yeah, they picked a bad time to sell. I mean, last year, the price bounced between $50,000 and $70,000, give or take, pretty much the whole year. And they sold in the 50s and pushed the price down, I think, into the high 40s. So like, not only did they sell early, they sold into like a bad point in time in a short-term trading range. So I don't know. I'm not impressed with countries. You know, like United States, I think 100,000 of those Bitcoin actually belong to BitMEX that they'll return to them. And the executive order even mentioned returning Bitcoin to the owners that should be holding it themselves instead of holding it at the federal level. So it's tough to be patient because it's like the speed of Bitcoin runs into the slowness of large corporations and governments. And the only thing I think where you'll see speed is when states that haven't exposed what actions they're taking in Bitcoin, when they expose it. And I think that'll be like, hey, here's what we did. And it'll basically, you know, in one news article, you get to see what they did over 6 months or 12 months or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you think about what happened with all the Silk Road assets, 13 years to return those, if they're even returned at this point. I don't even know anymore. But it's, I mean, talk about slow from a government owning something and trying to get it back. It's just, it's miserable. So yeah, I agree. I think states will definitely move quicker, but kind of what we talked about earlier were public companies, right? I mean, that's kind of the new spot where if somebody's going to move, it's going to be a public company moving much faster than a government entity. And the governments are going to have to try to play catch up at some point. And at that point, I mean, they can print money, which I guess is good, but you're not going to be able to catch up to the strategies and the 21s and those kind of companies of the world.
Right. And not only that, once it's exposed that the United States government's buying Bitcoin, that then the floodgates are really open and countries need to expedite their decision making and start buying, and you're going to outstrip the sellers pretty quickly. So the price is going to run.
Yeah. So other things in the government side of things that I was paying attention to, there was a letter by the DeFi Education Fund that was sent to the White House and David Sacks that really was asking them to stop prosecuting open source software developers. And this is kind of related to Tornado Cash, what they pretty much said, and they had a bunch of people in the crypto community kind of sign off on this too, is look, they don't have control of how their code is used by third parties. Right now, the Tornado Cash developer has a trial scheduled for mid-July. Pretty much, you look at like the DOJ and the Treasury Department, they have stated that they're not going to regulate crypto by criminal prosecution. The only person that's not saying that is the New York U.S. Attorney's Office, and they apparently are doing the opposite. So it'll be interesting to see if New York changes their mind. They seem to kind of do whatever they want, and it's usually different from the rest of the world anyway. So I don't know. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of going back to this confusion on what free speech is and isn't. And I'll be intrigued to see if it actually is allowed to go through, what happens with the trial in July.
Yeah. And so you've got that going on in New York, and then in Arizona, they passed a strategic Bitcoin reserve bill through the House and Senate, and it just needs governor's signature to be passed into law. So, you know, we've talked about the advantages of the United States having 50 states that can all operate fairly independently, and Texas, you know, moving forward on some Bitcoin strategic reserve things. And then Utah was kind of had a pretty serious run at getting something passed, but now Arizona's going to be the closest. I don't know. I think that the governor might veto it. I think not because of a problem with Bitcoin, but because the legislature hasn't done a few things that she wants done first. So it's like a political thing.
Yeah, that aren't related anything to Bitcoin. It's the disabilities for Arizonians thing, which is crazy to me, but this is politics. So I don't think anything is crazy anymore in politics.
No, and if that's why it gets vetoed, then once they get that stuff squared away, then run it back up the flagpole.
Yeah. The other thing that was interesting that I did see, so we've talked about some of the miners in the past. Riot Mining just secured a $100 million credit line against part of their Bitcoin reserves from Coinbase Financing. So this is kind of really cool. You're starting to see more of this, or I think we'll start to see more of this. The rate is going to be 7.75 minimum, and that's an annual rate. The term's going to be 364 days. Their whole goal for doing this is short-term funding for expansion. And if you think about that $100 million credit line, they have more than 19,000 Bitcoin, which is worth almost $2 billion. So it is a very small credit line compared to things, but it is kind of cool that they're using some of their Bitcoin reserves as the asset that they're borrowing against.
Yeah, I think the Bitcoin-based loans are going to start happening in a larger scale. Strike, Jack Mallers' company Strike, is now allowing up to $100,000 loans in Bitcoin using your Bitcoin as collateral against the loan. And I think rates started at 12%. So that's a start, but it's not a very competitive loan compared against, you know, other traditional loans. But I mean, if you're convinced Bitcoin is going to beat 12%, then there's an opportunity there.
Yeah. And in addition to that, so Nexo is coming back to the US market. They exited back in December of 22 after FTX and everybody else failed. A collapse, I should say. And really their reason was they just said there was very unclear regulatory environment in the US. And they've been having a lot of discussions with the team, the administration, and they're happy now. So they're coming back. They're one of the few that didn't really have the problems that everybody else did, because they made better loans, I guess, or didn't make crazy loans like everybody else did. But I'll be intrigued to see what happens with that now too.
Well, yeah, I mean, somebody needs to prove that there's a smart way to use Bitcoin as collateral, overestimate the, or have the loan to value in the 20% range or something that's highly unlikely to get called. And, you know, that way, once you start doing that, then holding Bitcoin becomes a little bit more, a little easier, because you can put it to work a little bit. And, you know, like I said, you know, between inflation and quality of life, lifestyle improvements, and if you're selling real estate to buy Bitcoin or selling stocks to buy Bitcoin, you know, you're selling things that you used to be able to get leverage against when you needed some cash for something that you can't anymore. So if you can start doing that and get back in, you know, basically turn Bitcoin, you know, they call it pristine collateral all the time, but it's pristine collateral that you can't really get a loan against right now. So once they clean that up, I think it becomes a more attractive sort of value.
Yeah. I mean, I think understanding that how to get money or use crypto as a way to do things in the future is going to be what everybody's looking to try to understand. MetaMask just came out with an announcement on their Metal payment card, which is somewhat related to this, where users can pay using their self-custody wallet without needing to actually preload that card or convert it into fiat or rely on some sort of centralized exchange. So apparently what it sounds like is anytime you use this card, the transaction will be authorized by a smart contract in less than 5 seconds. The only caveat to all this is you have to hold your crypto on the main network, which is a layer two on Ethereum. It is supposed to debut to the world this quarter. They've partnered with both a couple of fintech companies, CompuSecure and Banks, which I think is one of those Brazilian banks, Brazilian companies. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, this is, it's kind of cool to me to see that you can hold your crypto in a self-custody wallet and be able to spend it without having to change it out of crypto. So I'm intrigued to see how this goes.
Yeah. And as more and more people view Bitcoin as a store of value and more people place value on it, then the more likely it is that people want to trade it direct. If we can start to figure out the rails to create that, then you start to bleed into the medium of exchange phase of Bitcoin, and kind of the store of value phase will be locked in.
Yeah. So speaking of Ethereum, the other thing that I saw too was one of the proposals is being talked about, and it seems kind of crazy, but they are talking about increasing their gas fees by 100x over the next 4 years. The benefit from this is it will increase their transactions per second from about 20 to about 2,000 transactions per second. So, and there would be no hard fork required. So I think they're going to start looking into this and see what happens. I mean, we've heard a lot of negative news about Ethereum in the past and how the chain is dying, but at least they're still trying to innovate and see what happens and where it goes from here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of changes on Ethereum lately. There's a lot of talk of changes, at least.
And then I guess yesterday was Satoshi Disappear Day. I don't know if you have heard about this before. I guess this is kind of new to me, but it was kind of intriguing. So Gavin Andreessen, apparently back, God, what is this? A long time ago, 13, 14 years ago, mentioned he was meeting with the CIA in a private message to Satoshi. And then shortly thereafter, one of the early contributors, Kiba, came out and said, "Hey, I think Satoshi's gone. Let's mark this day and we'll celebrate it as Satoshi disappearing," because apparently he wanted not to have anything to do with the CIA. He was kind of pushing back on some of those meetings, but Gavin went ahead and had it. So since then, it's had about 73 new versions, and April 28th is now officially Satoshi Disappear Day.
Yeah, the Satoshi stuff is interesting, because it's kind of a little bit of the mystique to the origins of Bitcoin. There's, I don't know, if Bitcoin continues to do what it's going to do, like, it's got to be one of the most famous anonymous people out there. I mean, it's kind of a cool thing to do.
Yeah, I guess the question I have is, will we ever know, right? Even after he dies, assuming he hasn't died already, there's talk that some of the guys that have died could be him, but I don't know. Was it a person? Was it a group? Who was it? Right. So Citizen X made an interesting announcement, which is Citizen X is a citizenship by investment company they just acquired Plan B Passport. So for those of you that have read The Sovereign Individual, it seems to be like this is becoming more and more closer to being a reality, where you're seeing investment-based migration and the power is really moving away from the nation states and into the hands of the people to decide where their money flows and where the taxes go. So kind of intrigued to see what happens here. This is something I would love to see happen more of, but I think it's still very niche and there's probably not a huge thing, but it's, I mean, it's getting some attention, at least in the Bitcoin community.
Yeah. Again, you know, there's a lot of sandboxes to play in, and some bad ideas will fall apart and good ideas will get modified and kind of go to the top. So maybe this is one of those.
So speaking of some bad ideas, we talked a while ago about a Harvard-led study that called out Bitcoin mining as significantly contributing to like harmful cross-state particulate air pollution. And it said it was impacting close to 2 million Americans. Well, come to find out, there was an expert from the Energy and Environmental Sustainability Group that came out and called the study deeply flawed. Shocker. That seems to be common with Harvard and any of these latest studies. He pretty much mentioned the reference list was mostly news stories instead of peer-reviewed papers, like most of them should be. And he said a lot of this was debunked back in 2023 and that it really shouldn't be taken seriously by lawmakers. It was pretty much they wanted to come out with a story that said Bitcoin mining is bad and how do we massage the data to make it look that way, and just kind of a hit piece.
So. Right. No, I saw a little bit of that, and I saw that I think Bitcoin, the mining network, is up to the high 50% renewables and sustainable energy. And that I don't believe that includes like flare gas, stranded energy, and things like that. So I think if when you start to include that, it's a pretty clean way to use energy.
So one other interesting thing that I did see is that Lace Wallet, which is a Cardano wallet, is now supporting Bitcoin. It's a wallet that was developed by IOHG, the developer of Cardano. And that's kind of intriguing to see that Cardano and Bitcoin are now going to be supported in the same wallet.
Yeah, it has been a while since we talked about cross chains and the importance of being able to move things over. But I mean, if I were Cardano, I would want to try to hitch my wagon to Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's been talked about in the past that from the beginning, I think a lot of the things that Cardano developed were very similar to the way that Bitcoin was developed. So it is very easy to kind of go back and forth. And Cardano seems to be one of the chains that's focusing a lot on how to interact with Bitcoin moving forward. So exciting. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it's definitely in the right direction.
Cool.
We've talked about Helium a couple of times in the past few weeks. They are apparently now partnering with AT&T. And they've partnered with Telefonica in Mexico, T-Mobile in the past two. Now AT&T customers will be able to use the decentralized network that Helium has set up, and it will bring like 100 million or something crazy more people onto the Helium network as well. So it'll help bridge some of the gaps that AT&T has in certain areas where they don't have the true 5G infrastructure. So, I mean, it's kind of intriguing to see that this whole D-PIN concept is flowing into other places that other large companies want to partner with these D-PIN companies and expand the coverage for everybody involved.
Yeah, if they can show like actual use case and value in the real world, I think that would go a long way, especially in something as common and as like in everybody's pocket as cell phone service.
Yeah. And we haven't talked much about RWAs in a while, but Deloitte just came out with it's at $300 billion. So that'd be about a 27% CAGR, which would be really intriguing to see. I mean, that's a high growth rate, and $4 trillion of real estate in a decade would be great, but that's still just a tiny fraction of the total amount of real estate there is in the world.
Yeah. I mean, like the real world asset stuff it was gaining a lot of traction. And then I feel like Bitcoin pulled away from the rest of the altcoin world, and that kind of put a damper on the altcoin talk. But as things come back, I'm sure we'll get to hear more about it. You know, Larry Fink supports the Real World Asset Initiative. So when he supports something, it typically works out.
Yeah. And then the last thing that I had that was kind of interesting was Trump's meme coin. He promised to, for the top 25 holders of his meme coin, he would put together a crypto dinner for them. So, shocker, the Democrats want to impeach him over this, although there's a handful of things they want to impeach him on. So I'm not sure, some sort of clarity on what you can and can't do with them. But this was kind of an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, you know, the Trump stuff, it can be divisive. So I'm not sure where it goes, but the less crypto stuff, the better for me. I think if he sticks to Bitcoin, you know, it seems to be more bipartisan.
Yeah. What else did I miss?
I've got everything checked off on my notes this week.
Cool headlines that keep popping up. So I'll be intrigued to see what happens in the next week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it will not be boring.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Al. Talk soon.
Thanks, Jason. Sounds good.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.